This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Back in March 2022, a significant resolution was passed at the fifth session of the United Nations Environment Assembly, or UNEA, titled End Plastic Pollution, towards an international legally binding instrument. So this resolution acknowledged the severe global issue of plastic pollution, recognizing its detrimental effects on the environment, society, and sustainable development. So it mandated that the UN Environment Programme Executive Director establish an international negotiating committee, or INC, to create a legally binding treaty addressing plastic pollution across its entire life cycle. So this landmark decision marked the beginning of a process towards a global agreement on plastic pollution with the aim of finalizing the treaty by the end of 2024. So the fourth session of the INC to develop this internationally legally binding instrument on plastic pollution is set to take place from the 23rd to the 29th of April. It's happening over in Canada. Many battles are set to be fought, especially by the civil society organizations at these negotiations, to effectively respond to the global plastics pollution crisis. What are they exactly? So today on the show, I'm going to speak to Arpita Bhagat. She is the Plastic Policy Officer at Gaia Asia Pacific, and also Dharmesh Shah, a consulting senior campaigner for the Plastics Treaty at the Center for International Environmental Law, or CIEL. They're going to share more. Welcome, both of you. How are you today?
Hi, Juliet. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to have you both on the show. I know both of you are joining me from overseas today, so thank you so much. And I know you're very, very busy preparing for INC as well. So yeah, okay. I guess, you know, maybe just to very quickly start off with, you know, if you could just tell us a little bit about your respective organizations and the work they do, you know, towards the movement to end plastic pollution. Arpita, you want to start first?
Sure. Thanks, Julia, for having us and talking about this very important topic. Just to let you know, Global Alliance for Incinerator Alternatives was founded in 2000. We are a network of grassroots groups as well as national and regional alliances, representing more than 1,000 organizations from 92 countries whose ultimate mission is a just, zero-waste world built on respect for ecological limits and community rights, where people are free from the burden of toxic pollution and resources are sustainably conserved, not burned and dumped. And just to let the viewers, the listeners know, we are the only international nonprofit organization focused on waste and plastic pollution specifically.
Okay, thanks for that. And Dharmesh, can you tell us a little bit more about the Center for International Environmental Law? And I do know that you've had some background working with Gaia as well, right?
Yes. Thank you, Juliet. So CIEL is a nonprofit organization that focuses on using international law and policy to promote environmental justice, in short. In the context of plastic pollution specifically, CIEL has been actively engaged in advocating stronger regulation policies to address the issue, the plastics treaty being one of them. We've been engaged in the plastics treaty process from the inception, even before the resolution, UNEA resolution was passed. CIEL's approach is basically a combination of legal analysis, advocacy, and collaboration with organizations and stakeholders like Gaia, BFFP. one of the main aims of CIEL is also to hold corporations accountable for the plastic production and mismanagement practices. So that is what we do, in short.
I was just going to say Gaia has also been involved in the UNEA since, I think, the beginning. Yeah. I was not around then, but I know of the history and Gaia and Dharmesh being there, actually. So we've been involved in UNEA. We've also been involved in the Basel Convention. Mm-hmm. In 2009, plastic waste was added as one of the toxic sort of waste to tackle under Basel. And our approach is really to work via our members. Our members have the expertise and the knowledge to kind of push for the just transition and mm-hmm. zero waste solutions. And my coordination for Asia Pacific is also heavily to coordinate with our members to kind of provide them with the capacity building resources and sort of ensure that everything is available for them in their advocacy work with their governments. They understand the strategy of what we are doing, why we are doing it, and how to do it as well. And it's really the members who are on the ground, who are pulling the weight forward, including, you know, members in Malaysia, in Indonesia, in Philippines, and in East Asia, in, you know, Vietnam, and in also South Asia. So it's a very coordinated action in Asia Pacific, and we also work in a coordinated fashion as a global team, alongside the likes of CL, of EIA, as well as our sister movement Break Free from Plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So I think in the last 2 years itself, because the treaty has such a short time frame and so much needs to be done, there is a lot of organizational coordination strengthening that has happened, thanks also to the efforts of Dharmesh, who leads the Plastics Treaty Coalition, in bringing together different forces and different organizations who have their priorities. So for Gaia, based because voices are an important priority to bring in the conversation for the treaty, but also our priority is production reduction and having false solutions out of the window. I'm sure we can talk about that later. But we also respect the priorities of the IPEN movement, who want to keep toxics out of the plastics treaty and ensure that, you know, we are all speaking in a unified civil society voice, which is, you know, really, really important, given that the forces we are fighting are much stronger economically in the kind of reach they have with the governments and, you know, even with the public overall.
Mm-hmm. And that is interesting, because I think we saw that happening also quite a lot in INC3, right? And I want to ask you about that, right? So, okay, as I mentioned during the introduction, that we know that INC began its work, what was it, second half of 2022. There have been 3 meetings so far. And I think, you know, we've spoken on the show about what happened at INC 1 and 2. Can you just remind us about what happened at meeting number 3? Yeah, so I know there was some progress, but it was mostly quite frustrating. That's what I got from some of the people I spoke to who attended. Maybe you can share what were some of the high points and the low points from INC3, either of you?
Yes. So the INC3, the main area of discussion, because the focus was finalize the text, which is going to be at the center of all the INC negotiations. So now we have, as we go into the INC4, we have what is called the revised zero draft. At INC3, it was a zero draft that was discussed. And zero draft is basically a list of options that have been presented to member states to discuss the text of the treaty. So it's more like a menu card of options, mm-hmm, that are supposed to be, you know, that members will negotiate and select the best option that is applicable. And this is where, you know, the negotiations happen. It's like, okay, what is best for my country versus what is best for your country? Versus, of course, the highest ambition would be what is best for the planet. But then the negotiation is mainly about, you know, what we call, a lot of countries have to take economic considerations into account. So that's where the difficult part of the negotiations come in. So the majority of the time was spent on deciding on how we want to proceed with the text of the zero draft. And several different groups split up. We had contact groups where the countries are given a mandate to decide or discuss specific elements of the zero draft. Zero draft has several topics,
yep,
because it's a very complicated issue. And we're looking at the life cycle of plastics, which is from production, extraction, if I may argue it that way, oil extraction, production, refinement, and then use and disposal. So there are several complicated nuances within each life stage of plastics. So these have to be discussed, and the contact groups were given a mandate to look at different parts of the zero draft, right? And they go into contact groups, they discuss the text, and then the idea, the hope was that they would come back with a refined text, which is not what happened, unfortunately. We had a revised zero draft, which is much bigger than the zero draft, with much bloated text, and which delays negotiations, because more text you put in, the more discussions are needed to remove the text and streamline it, which is what we'll be doing at INC4. Okay. So I'll stop there. that would be the add more to
Arpita,
that.
Yeah, anything else you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, so I think the good point also, you know, of INC3 is that nothing was removed till the very last moment. Some of the informals look like there will be an agreement on intersessional work, which is the work that needs to happen between two INCs, where majority of actually the work actually happens. And so it's very important because some of the technicalities need to be figured out. Everything cannot be negotiated in a, you know, round of meeting in like 8-9 days. So it looked till the very last minute. It was high drama where we were kind of in a point where there could have been agreement on intersessional, but limited to chemicals. So we were all like nearing tears. I can remember that moment, but thankfully we didn't have that. So the good thing is that some of the good thing is that some things didn't happen. And also the good thing is we have now from a 34 odd page zero draft to a 68 odd page revised zero draft, but everything is still there. We still have the primary plastic polymers provision. We still have the provisions on, you know, hazardous chemicals and reuse and all of those very, very important things that we need to have. But the bad thing is that it's going to be a more bigger challenge at INC4 on how do you negotiate that. So we will have now subgroups, as Zarmesh has pointed out, which a lot of things happening simultaneously, and a lot of people needing to follow those and coming back and sort of supporting member states. And as things get more complicated and technical, the support that we need to provide to our member states who of course are very busy people and may not necessarily have all of the technical expertise is much more. And one of the good things is also that the concept of just transition is gaining traction, including especially in Asia Pacific region. There is growing interest. I think after we had a brief conversation in the regional meeting for the first time at INC3, as with the Asia Pacific group, they showed interest in just transition and they were also participating in the just transition event that was organized by the International Alliance of Waste Pickers, which is great for us. But now the challenge is how do we ensure that the definition of just transition is well-defined. There is definition of waste pickers well-defined. And just transition is not just like a separate provision. I mean, it's good to have a separate element on just transition, but it's reflected across the draft that we have for the treaty, including also on financial mechanism and prioritizing the important vulnerable groups. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it is there. And I think the issue with analyzing the revised zero draft, which a lot of the organizations have been doing in the last few months that we've had before INC4, is many of the additions are not legally valid, not making sense. The text was not streamlined. And this makes, you know, a lot of confusion to arise among the groups and how we tackle that going into INC4.
Okay. I do remember, I mean, when we were talking about the scope of the treaty, I also spoke to somebody from Malaysia who was there. Her name is Magiswari Sangralingam from Sabah Alam Malaysia. So I remember her telling us about how oil producing companies also tried to derail and delay the negotiations. I mean, there were those sorts of issues as well. I mean, anything from there that you just want to remind our listeners about, you know, about what happened at INC3?
Yeah, I mean, Magis is a very dear friend and she's a member of ours and I work closely with her. And of course, this is completely right information. So what we have seen in the last few INCs, but it became even more, what is the right word, politically correct word, and more visible and more
blatant,
brutal, brutal and shameless, actually, is this group that calls itself like-minded group, also the Global Coalition for Plastics Sustainability, was announced, I think, a little bit by error by Iran. And this is basically plastic producing petchem investing countries that made a very concerted and very strategic effort to kind of block discussions from happening in the two contact groups, in the three contact groups, quite simultaneously, saying that their voices are not being heard. Consensus is key for treaty. And also, of course, their attempt overall was to ensure that this treaty mandate remains limited to waste management and disposal focus. And it was, I think, quite a taxing time for not just us, but also the different ambitious countries. And we need to remind ourselves that while we have these very vocal oil producing nations who try to stall progress, we have upwards of 509 countries which are ambitious, who need to be supported to become more vocal, and who need to be supported even in terms of resources to participate, especially the African group, as well as the Pacific small island developing states in Asia Pacific region, who stood upright, who made some statements, who understood that this is bullying that is happening, and tried to combat that, and really became the voice of collective conscience for us. But I'll let Dharmesh add more into this.
Sure. Dharmesh, yeah.
Thanks, Arpita. So it comes to petchem and petro-producing countries and industry generally, the sector itself, plastics is being seen as plan B, because there's a general downward trend globally with the shift to renewables, with the shift to EVs. There's a transition happening, energy transition happening across the world. And there is also a substantial dip projected in the future in demand for petchem and petroleum and oil and gas generally. So this is certainly a plan B. It is something that the oil and gas producing nations and the countries and the companies majorly benefit and profit from this sector. See plastics, petchem, chemicals, agrochemicals, a whole gamut of things that, you know, our economy is sustained by oil and gas. It's just not energy, but all these other things. And with that, which is plastic, is kind of one of the central material that is, you know, that sustains our modern lifestyle, modern economy. But now if you're talking about a global plastics treaty that is primarily looking at production cuts, which is the first obligation in the revised zero draft, or in the zero draft itself, the first one. It is talking about giving countries targets to limit the production of plastics, of primary plastic polymers, which means is a direct impact on how we do business, right?
Yeah.
And also affects the bottom line of all these companies. And the countries, especially a lot of these countries, also own these state-owned oil companies. So that is where the conflict of interest comes in, because when you're talking about a environmental problem like plastics, and there you have the key concern of these countries that are coming there to argue is economics. Like, what will happen to the companies that are making these plastics? While plastic pollution is there, we need to be concerned about it, but we do not want to stop making plastics. And these are conflicting ideas, you know. So that is what we're seeing there in INC playing out in a big way. Which is what is of concern.
Okay. Let's just go for a quick break, guys. When we come back, let's talk about what we anticipate is going to happen at INC4. I'm speaking today to Arpita Bhagat. She's the Plastic Policy Officer at Gaia Asia Pacific, and also Dharmesh Shah, Consulting Senior Campaigner for the Plastics Treaty from the Centre for International Environmental Law, or CL. We are talking about what's at stake at the next at the upcoming International Negotiating Committee meetings, which are happening over in Canada. We'll have more after this quick break. Keep it here on Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. This is Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Juliet Jacobs. Joining me on the line today are Arpita Bhagat. She's a Plastic Policy Officer at Gaia Asia Pacific. And Dharmesh Shah. He's a Consulting Senior Campaigner for the Plastics Treaty from the Centre for International Environmental Law, or CL. We are talking about INC4, which is the International Negotiating Committee. So these are, huge meetings that are happening. It's meant to create a legally binding treaty addressing plastic pollution across its entire life cycle. They've had three meetings so far. This fourth one, there's a lot at stake, and we're finding out more about that. So yes, INC4 happening over at Canada in Ottawa. What are some of the challenges that CSOs like the both of yours are anticipating that, you know, you're going to face at INC4?
Yeah, for me, very basic challenge is to get Asian members to INC because it's so far, and Canada is so expensive. So the first biggest challenge we are facing is funding. And let's be honest, it's very tight, given Canada is very expensive. And I think coming to the more technical or political challenges is you know, the like-minded group coming back with more, you know, strategic ways to block progress. Specifically, I think we are worried, at least I'm worried about whether they will challenge revised zero draft as a basis of negotiations, whether they will oppose chair's proposal for legal drafting group, whether they will again try to block primary plastic polymers to be included in the treaty text, as well as, you know, how full life cycle of plastic is defined. Like so far, if you look at the draft, there is no mention of fossil fuels or oil at all anywhere. While you have fall solutions with alternative plastics included, including bio-based plastics, I think that's another important concern for us in Asia. Rules of procedure, again, is going to be an important point of contention, specifically voting versus consensus. I think we can go into that a little bit more. But I think all of that kind of broadly encompasses the challenges that I feel are going to be important for us in Asia Pacific. And also one of the things that we are trying to do is how do we push ambition for some of the mid-ambition countries that we have in Asia Pacific, kind of trying to get them to see the validity and the possibility of reuse as a, also an economic opportunity. I think that's something that we want to push for more through different kind of scientific evidence that we're trying to gather at this time as well. Dharmesh?
Okay. Yeah, Dharmesh?
Yes. So to add to that, I feel the challenge will continue to face a lot of opposition to retaining this the obligation one, which is primary plastic polymers. It did face some threat last time, but as Arpita said, luckily, the revised draft, though bloated, it retained, it didn't delete anything, it just added more text to it.
Okay.
So there is a lot of opposition to the primary plastic polymers and production cuts overall. So protecting that will be a huge upward challenge. And that should be one of the main aims of the civil society and of the countries that are seeking an ambitious treaty. The lowest ambition that we could see is this treaty becoming about waste management, which is, you know, what she said, what Arpita said, is about false solutions. It's like countries just saying that plastics are not a problem as long as we manage them well. What does management mean? Means landfilling, incineration, cement co-incineration, plastic to roads, chemical recycling, a whole gamut of technologies that will then be used to divert plastics. It won't solve a problem because no matter how many incinerators we put up, and this has been Gaia's experience also working since 2000, incinerators will not solve the problem. Although we've been sold that for the past 20, 30 years as a solution, but all countries that have incinerators, including a lot of them in South Asia Pacific and Southeast Asia, have continued to deal with plastics. Singapore being a classic example, there are 4 big incinerators there, but the country still has a major plastic problem, right? And the techno fixation of the solutions, right? Waste management means technologies, and which is the biggest challenge. We'll have to push back against that in a big way. The other challenge is the complexity of issues. Just understanding life cycle. For many member states, it's very complicated. What do you mean by life cycle? And then there are different ways of interpreting it. Then what can we do to address it across the life cycle? How can we do it without impacting our economic sovereignty? And we hear a lot of what we call common but differentiated responsibility. That argument being used by a lot of countries in Asia, in the global south, saying that we have the right to make plastics because plastics is closely linked to development for us. So we need to make plastics in order to progress, and we have a right to grow and right to develop. So do not ask us to cut down production, right? So that is, again, an added challenge. And then the science of chemicals, that is, again, a very contentious issue. A lot of challenge in understanding how chemicals are being, although there's so much evidence out there, there's so much knowledge out there on how chemicals that go into plastics impact human health, ecology, biodiversity. And some of these chemicals are what they call forever chemicals, extremely toxic chemicals, cancer-causing, carcinogens. They continue. In 16, the last report of the UNEP that did an assessment is that anywhere from 10 to 16,000 chemicals are used in the plastic manufacturing process. And we don't even know, we know about just a fraction of these chemicals, about what health impacts these chemicals can cause. We don't even have public knowledge on a lot of these chemicals. That, again, is going to be a major issue. Like, how do we communicate science in a way that is that makes sense to policymakers overall? Mm-hmm. The last thing is stakeholder engagement. The overall space for stakeholder engagement, especially civil society groups, has been shrinking in environmental governance and decision making. So we have to keep pushing. And every time as negotiations go forward, there's always a threat of any country raising objections about this being open to stakeholders. And there you can easily kick observers like us out of a room where these discussions are happening. And we have no idea. And we have no way of opposing that, because any one country can say, we don't want observers in this room. And then, you know, we can be kicked out of that. So we continue to be dealing with that as a looming kind of a challenge as well. But so far, it's fine. We continue to be part of everything that's happening there, luckily, except a few meetings which are closed doors.
Okay. I was going to say, no wonder the both of you have rather stressed looks on your faces as I'm talking to you. It's like these rather monumental challenges. I'm putting it lightly, right? Okay. All right. So, okay. A lot of challenges, but like you still have that place at the table and you're still, fighting that good fight as it is. So I just want to go back to something, Arpita, that you were talking about. Yeah. So that voting based approach, right? So can you tell us a little bit about, you know, the potential impact of that, a voting based approach versus consensus in kind of shaping the strength of this plastics treaty?
Yeah. I mean, this is something that even I had to learn as I got involved in the INC, because when we are sitting in our so-called democratic countries, we of course believe everybody should have a voice, and decisions should be made by consensus, and that's kind of the argument that they throw around, and a lot of our members also struggle to understand the relevance of it, but the point of the matter is that if you want to make decisions via consensus for everything, then any one country can raise objection, and they will have one country veto power to block, and that could really block our negotiations. And this is what we have seen. We saw it at INC1, we saw it in a bigger way in INC2 and INC3. Of course, this debate was not opened. And what happens is, if you do not, well, first of all, consensus is the norm in multilateral spaces. You do not want to be seen as, you know, people obstructing. But we have seen at INC3 how shamelessly the like-minded group tried to do it. Having said that, voting has to be enshrined. Voting has to be protected, so that going in into not just, you know, the drafting of the treaty, sort of protecting the important provision, but going into the COP when the implementation begins, you still have sort of the precedent of voting, and therefore voting rules could still apply, so that when the time comes to kind of continue to build on the annexes where, you know, the groups of chemicals, the provisions on safety and sustainability criteria, all of the scientific evidence to keep improving on the skeleton draft, the skeleton text that we will have of different provisions, could continuously be upgraded. And if we still, get into COP without voting enshrined, we still have the problem of countries kind of vetoing many important chemicals, many important provisions, many important inclusions to be challenged and removed. So we have seen that in the case of UNFCCC. We have seen the kind of lack of progress and the kind of, challenges that the civil society has faced with the oil, I mean, with the result of, look at the COPs happening right now in oil-producing nations. Mm-hmm. That itself is a starting example of how much we have failed in that particular climate agreement. So I think I'm going to stop here and let Dharmesh explain further on why this is important. But in terms of, I also wanted to point out how important full life cycle is. If you look at Malaysia, for example, last time argued that life cycle actually begins at the polymerization stage. Mm. And many similar countries, which itself was like, better than a lot of other countries. But one of the interesting ways of arguing for full life cycles or is kind of emphasizing the health impacts that Dharmesh was talking about with cancers, with endocrine disruptors, and remembering that polymers, I mean, basically plastics themselves are chemicals itself. So how are we even kind of limiting this treaty to chemicals which are outside of polymers? Yeah. So in the language that we are now using is hazardous chemicals, including polymer, to remind ourselves and our member states that polymers themselves are chemicals. I just wanted to add that.
Okay. All right. Dharmesh, anything you wanted to add to that?
Yes, just to add to that, I think the rules of procedure will be key to deciding how ambitious the treaty can get, mm-hmm. actually. Because what's happening now is like the ability to make decisions is fundamental to an effective treaty, right? So this negotiation process is all about making sure that we have the highest ambition.
Yeah.
But what happens here and what is being pushed by some countries, and this is, again, we have a lot of other treaties like the Montreal Protocol, like the Minamata, like the GEF, Green Global Environment Facility. These are all, they all have a provision to vote. Of course, the initial aim will be to reach decisions through consensus. So there'll be a lot of time spent on negotiating and making sure that everyone's on board.
Okay.
But then sometimes you have countries that just have a very low ambition on certain issues. Their voting becomes important. Because then if you do not have voting, then we have a situation where we have the treaty itself will be defined by the lowest ambition or the country with the lowest ambition, right? So that is a very dangerous precedent that could really destroy this treaty, which is, what we saw in the UNFCCC, where there's so much deadlock. There's the reason why we have such a slow progress on UNFCCC is because of this issue. We have a similar issue there also. And we have prolonged, and we have a lot of countries who do not want to get on board. We have a lot of countries that do not want decisions on certain topics that certain issues or reductions in certain, so there is a certain inertia, and that inertia is the consensus-based approach will only aggravate that inertia. So we need, if you want a plastics treaty that is ambitious, then we need voting. That does not mean decisions should not be taken by consensus. Consensus should be a priority, but voting has to be part of the deal.
Okay. And so at INC4, I mean, will that be the situation then? I mean, what's actually going to happen? Do we know?
We don't. No idea.
It's okay.
The unknown. And all of us are waiting to see how this plays out.
Okay. So, all right. Again, I understand the stress on your faces. So it's okay. So there's a lot going on there. And I just wanted to go back to something that, some solutions, right, that both Gaia and I guess CL are also advocating for. I was reading about the role of waste pickers, right, and frontline communities, their role in the efforts to combat plastic pollution. You want to just, discuss that a little bit with our listeners as well?
So of course, I don't feel comfortable speaking on behalf of any community, first of all. But the role of waste pickers and other workers in informal settings, as well as impacted communities, informal workers who are engaged in recycling, who are engaged in production and across the life cycle of plastics, it cannot be overstated. And that is the kind of push that has been taken by waste pickers from the very beginning. And it is their result, the result of their efforts and their organizing over the last many, many years. Their just transition is even recognized and included in the treaty. But of course, there is ongoing efforts on how it will be defined. There is a visioning exercise that we are undertaking within the movement as Gaia, as Big Pico Plastics, looking at the upstream, the midstream, as well as the downstream of what just transition means, mm-hmm. With our members who are working with the communities themselves. So it is an uphill course that we are taking, and there are a lot of people involved. But essentially, it is important to get the definitions right, which currently the draft is not. And it's also important to highlight that whenever the transition from plastics to reuse to zero waste is happening, we need to remind ourselves, it's not like we are expecting that, okay, the treaty is drafted, it is ratified, and then next day there is no plastic to be handled. There is enough legacy plastic that requires handling, as well as there will be a time frame of how this transition happened. Of course, we want, control measures on production reduction to be signed by all countries, most countries, but its effect, the timeline that different countries take could vary. And that's why you have exemptions, provisional exemption being defined. So time frame is going to be key. But in that time frame, waste pickers, and I know waste pickers organization and groups in India, in Vietnam, in Nepal, and of course in other parts of the world, are looking at creating and thinking of pathways of how waste pickers' current informal, economy systems, informal chain, logistics chain that they have mastered over decades of, cleaning up the ways that we have created, could translate into reuse systems of how they can be involved in pickup, in cleaning, and in setting up those systems. So those kind of researches, those kind of pilots are happening. There is no one-shot solution. So these different sort of research, these different kind of testing that we do could vary from region to region. And we are seeing certain disparities right now in what reuse systems look like, and more research is going to be needed. But the waste pickers agree that, we need to stop production. We need to phase out hazardous plastics and polymers and chemicals, because they are the ones who are facing the most, most harm of that. So one of the things that, Dharmesh, I remember him talking about initially when we're thinking about principles before INC2, I believe, or was it INC3? Sorry, it's all jumbled up in my head. Talking about the do no harm principle, which is so important to be enshrined as a prevention principle that we call within the zero waste hierarchy. And this do no harm needs to be, it's not do no, I don't know what the ASEAN called it in its recent sustainable finance taxonomy. They call it do no significant harm. And that's just ridiculous, because then you are again talking about remediation and cleanup of legacy waste while you continue to put the toxics into our ecosystem. So we continuously remind ourselves to have human rights principle enshrined in the treaty. Currently, in the revised zero draft, this is very weak. So how do we bring it back? How do we keep emphasizing on health? How we keep emphasizing on do no harm and prevention is going to be key. Because while we are talking about just transition and figuring out just transition pathways with the waste pickers, with the informal workers who are the most impacted, with the frontline and fence line communities, we also need to at the same time ensure that you know, these toxics that we are putting into the ecosystem for them to handle and then for them to face is you know, face that. So it's looking at both sides and looking at it simultaneously and also looking at it with the indigenous people. So one of the big significant moments he had in the last INC was bringing together the indigenous people and the waste pickers, so that the solutions, the indigenous solutions that we had in Asia, right, not so long back, in our childhoods, the reuse and refill systems existed, the right alternatives existed. So it's about, you know, continuing to bring those systems back and show it to the world and show it to the member states that these zero waste solutions are possible. And that's why the involvement and centering these community solutions are so critical to be part of anything that we are pushing for in the treaty.
Okay. Dharmesh, was there anything you wanted to add to that question?
Just quickly, that this is, you know, the issue of workers and people along the value chain of plastics is very important. If you're looking at why is plastics so cheap, is because most of the cost is externalized on the planet, the communities, people, frontline communities, indigenous people. So that needs to be internalized. That's how plastics, the true cost of plastic is not being paid by us yet. And that is why the subsidies that are being provided to the fossil fuel industry, plastic manufacturers, to keep those production costs low, and the fact that you're not holding them accountable for the pollution they're causing across the life cycle. And those things, and that's where just transition comes in. It's not just about jobs versus jobs. It's about transitioning from this economy that's addicted to plastics to an economy that is more mindful of its use of materials, how it is interacting with the planet. So that transition is where and how we integrate these people. Because right now, the only people who are actually solving the problem in the real sense are the waste pickers, right? They're doing something, whatever they can, to address the plastic crisis. All of us mostly are consumers of plastics, and we are as much part of the problem. So even if the global north, like the US, psychologically, these countries have been told, citizens have been told that as long as you put the plastic in the right bin, your duty is done. Where does it go after that is not your problem. And all the plastic has been coming to countries like Malaysia, Indonesia, on ships, you know, to be recycled or dumped, not even recycled, just dumped and burnt. So that acknowledgement, which is what the treaty is trying to do, at least in theory. And this is why we need that kind of holistic systems thinking when we're looking at transitioning, and be mindful of the people that are impacted along the whole value chain of plastics.
Okay.
But just to add to that, this is so important and so well said, Dharmesh, but one of the things the industry sells us as consumers, and it has made this very strong narrative that if your food is not packaged in plastic, it is not safe. Mm-hmm. And how do we combat that narrative of something packed in plastic being hygienic, being clean, being safe, which is so false, because you're actually putting chemicals and toxins into your body by doing so. And the second thing, when Dharmesh talks about, you know, internalizing the currently the externalities of plastic pollution across the life cycle, which is why we have, of course, the provision on extended producer responsibility is, in my opinion, not enough. But we are, within the treaty, asking for a mandatory binding extended producer responsibility, right? So we have countries in Asia right now who haven't even drafted the EPR. So Thailand is an example. They've been talking about it for many years and they've still not arrived at it. Sri Lanka has just started to draft it and looking at how it could be implemented. The implementation that we see in India is so far from even being called, you know, valid, in my opinion. So if we have mandatory rules, we will have common minimum standards, and we will have the legitimacy that waste pickers and informal recyclers need within that particular policy paradigm.
Okay, guys. So yeah, you're set to, you know, head to Canada very, very soon. How are you guys hoping to ensure that all of the perspectives and the priorities of the Asia Pacific region are actually represented in these global negotiations at INC4, INC4?
It's an important question, but also very, very complex, because AP is a complex region, geopolitically speaking. Just in terms of the varying ambitions, economic ambitions, socio-political ambitions within the region. So, like I said earlier, many countries' plastics are linked to development and growth. And that's how at least they've been arguing it. It's not true, actually, because the true cost of plastic, if incorporated in, and the real impacts of plastics on society and human health, if they integrated into economic decision making, you might see a very different picture, but that's not how things are right now. So I would say there could be some alignment among the ASEAN region on things like trade, to some extent on, I think, waste management. We'll see some alignment there. But again, the overall, the ambitious parts of the treaty, there's a lot of misalignment among countries on how they want to approach that. That's the first part of the revised zero draft, which is plastic polymers and production cuts, chemicals of concern, and all those elements. Finance, again, there might be some alignment on financial mechanisms or what they call means of implementation. So you'll see a lot of countries coming together on how they want to see the provisions of this treaty be financed. Where should the money come from? Mm-hmm. If it's coming from the global north countries, then how should it be? Where should it go? Should it go into a fund? There you will see a lot of alignment. But yeah, that's my overall assessment at this point, at least.
Yeah, I think you've answered exactly like what is my job, basically, when you ask me about the priorities and how will we coordinate. So it's like you're like asking me about my job. So I think most of the work in terms of how we are coordinating as civil society has happened before INC4, and through the regional meeting, through the meetings that our members have with governments, through following up, through sending proposals, to at least speaking to those countries which are open to speaking. So a lot of that work has already happened. A lot of the assessment has already happened. We plan to see how we show up, in a divide and rule kind of manner. So as Damesh said, the Southeast Asia region remains mid-ambition. There is challenging with East Asia, West Asia, Pacific being the most ambitious one. And how do we tackle, for me, looking at South Asian countries like Nepal, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh, supporting them with capacity. A lot of the communications work would be centering around that and how we kind of amplify the voices of our members. So the little that I say, the better, actually, because it's a lot of strategic thinking and planning and delivering. We can hope for the best, but we have, like Dharmesh said, a very diverse, a very challenging group that does not even agree within themselves. So it's not like one country doesn't agree with the rest or two countries are falling out. It's like we have five sub-regions sitting together and basically doing what they want to do and keeping quiet when they want to keep quiet or bullying them because they can. So that's literally the state of affairs within the region. I think we are making strides as civil society on what we can do and how we can push and what we need to prioritize. So yeah, fingers crossed. Let's see what happens.
Okay. All right. So we are, rooting for you guys, of course, from the 23rd to the 29th of April. And I hope to catch up with you guys after when you do come back and we'll find out what actually happened. But thank you so much for sharing that. Really, really interesting and a very, very eye-opening sharing there. So I was speaking to Arpita Bhagat, Plastic Policy Officer at Gaia Asia Pacific, and Dharmesh Shah, Consulting Senior Campaigner for Plastics Treaty at the Centre for International Environmental Law, or CIEL. We will were talking about the, well, what's going to happen at the International Negotiating Committee meeting happening very, very soon. If you'd like to find out more about both of their organizations, so for Gaia, the website is no-burn.org, and for CL, it's just cl.org. So that's CIEL.org. But if you miss any part of our conversation today, you can always search for the podcast at bfm.my/earth. You can also find it on the BFM app. This has been Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.